Hello and welcome to Digestion Assessment Part 3. This is where we're going to go through some actual lab reports and interpretation guides so you can really put this together and have some practical information that you can use when you start to do these tests or when you continue to do these tests with your clients. There's quite a number of labs that do these tests. And some of them are better than others, and some of them have more information, some of them have less information, and they're all valid tests, and you will probably find your own personal favorites as you go through and do this work. So before we jump right in and begin, I just want to remind you that everything that I present is never intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional. It's not medical advice. And when you're working with people, you have to be really clear, especially when you're reading labs, that this is not medical advice, that you're just helping them to actually look inside their body, a window into what's going on, a window into the function. And you're going to help them to interpret it and educate them about what it means. But if they have any ongoing medical conditions or on medication, they definitely need to run anything by their attending doctor to make sure that it's consistent with whatever is going on with them. So let's just jump right in and take a look at our first test. This is the GI effects. This is an expensive test. This is around $400. This is the one that I said has the DNA. It's also the one that I just got frustrated with because so many of them said species not available and not found. And then when I started using BioHealth for that part of it, I was getting better results. But it could have been, who knows? You'll find which one you like the best. So if you look at the first page, there's an interpretive guide that goes with this. And I'm going to bring up the interpretive guide and switch back to it so that you can see how they work together. It looks like this, and you'll see that it's organized so that each section, so right here, abnormal, on the first page, abnormal bacteria and fungi, it talks about the specific things that you're finding there, and it goes through for each section, it tells you the significance and what symptoms you might see, and even gives you some treatment options. So it's a really great place to get started, and that's what the interpretation guide is. I want to leave that for you to go through on your own, and that's in the handout section. And then I want to just go through and give you, like, as I'm going through this, what would I be thinking? These are what we're calling obligate anaerobes and facilitative anaerobes and obligate aerobes. So they're basically bacteria that live as part of our normal flora, but it's important that they stay in balance. I mean, we all know about lactobacillus and bifido in the second section, that those are the ones that are usually in the supplements that we take. But the others you'd think, oh, streptomyces, mycoplasm, clostridia, E. coli, I can't really have that stuff in me. Well, you do. And as long as it stays in balance, as long as there's not a predominance and a high amount of it, then you're going to be okay. But when you have large amounts, that's where you get into that small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, where it's really the normal flora, but it's overgrown, right? You need to bring things in balance. So what I'm seeing as I look at this one, I see the bacteroides is low, and that's one of the really positive ones that we want to be higher. And then there's the clostridia is sort of towards the high end, but it's right in the middle of the normal range here. So that's not as big a concern. The Prevotella is high. That's going into the high range. It's in the yellow range. The Fusobacteria is okay, but the Streptomyces. So I would say that this person has some out-of-balance flora. They need to bring their flora in balance. Look at the ones that we know of the beneficials, lactobacillus and bifido. Bifido's okay, but lactobacillus is really low, okay? E. coli is right in the middle, so I'm not concerned about that. Now, what we need to do with this person is to give them some probiotics, get them on probiotic foods, but also give them some probiotics. And in addition to lactobacillus in particular, because it's low, there's a species called Plantarum, which helps it to implant, that helps the good guys to implant. There's also L. salivarius,
Lactobacillus salivarius, which is also a good one like that. And then there's Saccharomyces boulardii. These are all, they're not actually inhabitants, normal inhabitants, but they're helpful bacteria in that they help to predominate the good guys and push out the bad guys. So that's the things I'm finding on this page. In summary, the bacteroides and the lactobacillus are too low. The Provotella and the Streptomyces are too high, and we need to bring them in balance, and we bring them in balance with probiotics. Page 2, here's where we have our really bad guys, our pathogenic bacteria. Pathogenic means bad guys, in other words. Helicobacter is negative, E. coli, this particular strain of E. coli, not the one that's a normal inhabitant, and Clostridia and Campylobacter. And those are all normal. So that looks good. The yeast and fungi, it says the Saccharomyces is 2+, but if it's Saccharomyces boulardii, that's actually not usually a problem, but if it's another kind of Saccharomyces in the yeast family, it could be causing an allergic reaction. So we'd want to watch out for that. And again, working with the normal flora and helping to balance the normal flora and maybe getting off sugar and doing all the general yeast type stuff and perhaps some sort of a mild antimicrobial type thing or anti-yeast type thing, maybe some artemisia or coconut, because coconut oil has the MCTs and lauric acid, which help to get rid of those guys. The adiposity index is down here, and actually this one is a very good adiposity index because the firmicutes are low and the bacteroidates are high. It's a different species than the one on the first page. This is bacteroides, and this is bacteroidates. The next section, drug resistant themes. I think these actually are laid out like what these abbreviations stand for. I know the VAN is vancomycin. The first one is gentamicin, kantamicin, and tobramycin. So this person is drug resistant, meaning that the bacteria living in her or whatever she's got are not going to she's not going to respond to that particular set of antibiotics or the methicillin. Right, but any of the others are okay. So if this person was in a position where they had a life-threatening disease and needed to go on antibiotics, we wouldn't want to put them on gentamicin, kanamycin, or tobramycin, or methicillin, because they wouldn't work. So why waste time? Next page. This is the beneficial short-chain fatty acids. And short-chain fatty acids are really good fuel for your intestinal lining. They are excellent, in fact, fuel for your intestinal lining. And they are, it's important if they're low to bring them up again. In this particular case, it's totally fine. Butyrate, which is another type of fatty acids, it's actually found in butter and some other things. But if you just actually take a butyrate supplement, it smells an awfully like a lot like butter. I've never taken it, but I had somebody taking it and she told me it smelled like butter, and she let me smell it. So those are good. Her acetate is okay. Her butyrate is still within the green. It's towards low end of green, so I would be watching that because the butyrate percent, even though she had a lot of butyrate in there, the percent of butyrate compared to the other fat short-chain fatty acids is a little bit low. And the reason is, if you look, you'll see that propionate is pretty high and valerate is pretty low. So it's really good to have a healthy balance of that. So she might benefit from things that help with short-chain fatty acid production. And some of those things are psyllium, chia seeds, prunes. So those are three good ones that I would start with and just try to bring that balance up. I don't think that there's a warranting for any supplementation at this point, but it's a matter of changing some of the dietary things. The lactoferrin, actually high lactoferrin is an inflammatory marker, so she's got low lactoferrin, which is fine. She's got no white blood cells and no mucus, meaning there's no real sign of overt infection in her gut. And then the immunology, secretory IgA, is it's not bad, 55. I've seen, most of the time I see them, they are really, really low because people are stressed out. When it's really high, it indicates that there's a really lot of antigenic activity going on there, whether it be to foods or candida or other organisms. But super low indicates that there's been a stress for a long time, and the cortisol actually damages the secretory IgA and decreases it. But this one looks, you know, it looks pretty good. It's sort of towards the lower third of the normal range. And then the anti-gliadin secretory IgA. That is the measure of the gluten, that gliadin fraction of gluten in the stool. And this person has a 3.6. It looks like the top end of the range is 6.4. So she's within the range. She's in the top 75%, so she's getting close. But I would take this as being a decent number because the secretory IgA is strong. Sometimes I get these back and the secretory IgA is like 3 or 4 or 5, really low. And when the secretory IgA is really low, you're not going to get an accurate reading if you're doing stool antibody tests because your body's, they're just not making enough of it. But this person is making a fair amount of it. So I would say that she's probably not very sensitive to gluten if she is at all. Okay, so next page is the gastrointestinal function. This is the fun part because it tells us a little bit about some of the, remember we talked earlier about pancreatic function and how well we're doing with enzymes and that sort of thing, and fat digestion. This tells us more about that. So I really like this part of the test. The pH is 6.1, which is just, it's fine. You know, it's within the range of what it should be. Maybe it could be a little bit higher, but I think it's fine. It's not something I would spend a whole lot of time. I'd probably be talking to this person about doing an alkaline diet versus an acid-forming diet just to keep it balanced and eating more fruits and veggies, looking at the charts and making sure that she doesn't eat too many in the grains and sugars and all that to keep this and maybe move it up just a little bit, but not anything that I would be cautioning her about. Elastase, that's a measure of pancreatic function. And that's actually, when that is low, it indicates that the person is not making enough pancreatic enzymes. Yeah, so the optimal level is, well, actually the optimal level is greater than 500. So if it's low, they're not making enough. And hers is about 345. So the chart is deceiving, and I see why. It looks like she's dead set in the middle, but it looks like also it goes and it has a break there and then goes further up. So they're saying, and I'm looking at the interpretation guide, they're saying that it should be 500 or more. So this person's a little bit low in pancreatic function. So I would probably be giving this person some enzymes to help that along and talking to them about eating more raw foods, less cooked and processed food, less foods that are dead, more foods that have enzymes. So making things like sauerkraut and eating foods that are rich in enzymes like soaked and sprouted nuts and seeds. And, yeah, sprouts in general. The triglycerides are not bad. You're really looking for, are they elevated? And this is, it's well less than 181. It's less than half that, so not a problem. Putrefactive short-chain fatty acids. That's basically short-chain fats that are good source for the bacteria to break down and putrefy. So hers is pretty low. It's in the low half, so I'm not concerned about that. Vegetable fibers are rare. Some of them, ideally, I would want to see none or few. So now it's rare. I think it's fine. It would be best to see none. It means that you're really, really digesting everything. But I think the only way to really do that 100% is to be blending everything. And then your absorption. Okay, so these indicators, the fat, the cholesterol, and the long-chain fatty acids are all indicators of fat absorption. So if they were really, really low, then it says that this person is not absorbing and maintaining good fat balance. But if it's, high, if it's too high, then there's too much. So the basic, right here, I think everything's normal. The cholesterol, that 61 is not the same as a blood 61, by the way. So don't freak out and think, oh my God, she's way too low, because that would be way too low for a blood cholesterol. But it's just fine for a stool cholesterol. It's right within the range. The total fat is a little on the high side. And maybe if this person is overweight, I might talk to them about reducing their fat a little bit. And the best way to learn these is to go through samples. So here's the fun part, the sensitivity, the bacteria. So what this is basically saying, if you see there's a list of pharmaceuticals at the top, there's a list of botanicals at the bottom. And it gives a rating of how sensitive the bacteria in her body, the out of balance ones, are to these particular substances. And you can see there's only two pharmaceuticals, but there's quite a number more on the botanicals. It looks like garlic, berberine, golden seal, and oregano and olive leaf. These are all my favorite herbs, my favorite antimicrobials, because they're all gentle and almost food-like. So this would be what you'd show up with, is actually which of the killing agents. And they don't do them, all of them, but they do quite a number. And which one of those are reacting the most to your particular bugs. Unable to determine the sensitivity to pharmaceuticals and botanicals to the lack of growth of fungi. So there was no growth. Does that mean that the person doesn't have any fungi? Well, you know, they could have died in transit. That's very, very common, very likely. And you've got this wonderful interpretation guide. It's like 12 pages long. If I were you and just learning, I would take out that sample and just take them out and take the interpretation guide. Sit down with it before you look it up. Get a sense of what you think it is, and then look it up, and it'll reinforce what you're learning, and it will really help you to master it. The CDSA is the Comprehensive Stool and Digestive Analysis from they used to be called Great Smokies, Genova Diagnostics. I'm dating myself here. And they have some of the same things, right? You can see this as we go through and look at the description. This is the 2.01. And it has things like pancreatic elastase, putrefactive short-chain fatty acids, and N-butyrate, just like the other one. Here's a couple that are different. Calprotectin and eosinophil protein X. And they also have an interpretation guide, which is combo interpretation. So this is an interpretation guide that goes for both of the CDS and the CDS2. And what you'll do is you'll look them up. You go, well, I don't know what is it. We went through. It gives you a description of what they all mean. It's great learning tools. This one looks like they have triglycerides, long-chain fatty acids. It's the same thing as the other one. Cholesterol, phospholipids. We didn't have that in the other one. It's a good thing to have. Fecal fat. Okay, metabolic markers. Short-chain fats. N-butyrate, we had that in the other one. pH, of course. Beta-glucuronidase, that's a good one. That gives you some further information about how well you are going to detoxify in your gut. And then, these are bile salts. Lithocholic and deoxycholic acid are bile salts. So this gives you an idea of your gallbladder function as well. So it definitely gives you more. The eosinophil protein X, that's the one we were going to look up, it's an inflammatory marker for inflammatory bowel disease. And the calprotectin is an inflammatory marker. Lactoferrin is another inflammatory marker. So this particular, if you combine these two tests, they've got quite a number of inflammatory markers. They do the beneficials, they do the mycology. I mean, it's a long interpretation thing. They do some extra antigens if you want. Their extras, H. pylori, Shigella, and Campylobacter. So if you feel like you've been exposed or if a person's been exposed, they went to Mexico, they were on the road in rural places without running water, and they're complaining about diarrhea, and you may be wanting to run a test to see what it is that they've got in them. Okay, so this is a great learning tool. great learning tool. I want to go through one more test itself, because I think that's the way you're going to learn, is when I apply my clinical judgment to it. So this is a CDSA 2.0. And this person is very low in pancreatic elastase and putrefactive short chain fatty acids. So they're missing a lot of the protective mechanism of the short chain fatty acids in the lower bowel, and then they're not going to be absorbing their food real well because they're not digesting it real well because the pancreas isn't putting out. So again, another candidate for the digestive enzymes, probiotics, and monitoring. It looks like this one's okay. The eosinophil protein X is an inflammatory marker. It's less than 7. But look at this, calprotectin. It's greater than 500. Wow. It's a specific marker for inflammation right there in the GI tract. So this is telling us this person has maybe some inflammatory bowel disease going on. You're going to want to support this person with anti-inflammatory type herbs and foods, you know, ginger and turmeric and healing foods for the gut like NAC and glutamine and other things like that. And they give you a really good description in the GI effects book about bile acids. This person is very high. You might go, oh, I wonder what that means. So you would look it up. The ratio is right there in the middle. The high numbers are indicative of poor bile function because we're in the red. So let's look at the next page, page 2. We've got the beneficial bacteria, good amount, right in the middle on the lactobacillus, high on the E. coli, and low on the bifidobacter. And no candida present. But see, that is something where I'd be wanting to get more of those lactobacillus in there and bring down that E. coli. And it's not pathogenic at this point, but I wouldn't want to take that chance of it becoming so. Becoming immune compromised and then having the gut to the E. coli take over. Negative for crypto, giardia, and entamoeba. 39-year-old female, had come in with lots of problems in her gut, constipation and not moving her bowels enough and getting bloated and sometimes doubling over. And she tried various enzymes and bile salts and all sorts of stuff, but she's still having problems, so we sent her. I had a feeling she had H. pylori. So we did this test after we had done the GIFX test about 4 months before, and sure enough, the H. pylori came out. And then we put her on an H. pylori protocol where she avoided all her allergens, of course, and then she did some Metula tea and mastic gum. And took care of it. We waited till she was on it for a month. I told her to go on it for one more month, and then we could try weaning her off of that and seeing how it went. Well, she went about 2.5 months, I think, on the H. pylori supplements and came off, and everything was fine. So you can see where it says this is a simple test, right? Compared to those other guys with all the graphs and stuff, BioHealth keeps it simple. It's basically shows you the amount of growth, stool and ova and parasites, which is the number 1, 2, 3, and 4 here. And so we have no ova and parasites except a little bit in the third one, endolymax cysts. Well, if you go and look that up, you find that nobody knows what it does. It's supposedly harmless and innocuous, and there's no reason to get rid of it. So we decided that we would just take it along for the ride. And since we were going to be doing some things to help with the Klebsiella, like I think we did grapefruit seed extract for a while, and we did some olive leaf, and there's several other things that we did. And the endolymax, the next time we did it, was gone, and so was the Klebsiella. But there was a little bit of E. coli had taken its place. It said it was just mild amount, very small amount of E. coli. This is the bacterial overgrowth of the small intestine test. So you could see that at baseline, she had a 14, and then 12 at 20 minutes, and 14 at 40 minutes, and 8 at 60 minutes, and then, woo, at 90 minutes and 2 hours, it shot way up. And that's an indication that she's got a lot of bacterial overgrowth that is eating, that is basically producing methane, eating her food and producing methane and hydrogen.